This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn-Mark Rushen-Kennison and Noel Lim. It's 6 a.m. Friday, the 17th of July, and the weekend starts tomorrow, guys. I am quite excited to just get a good long night of sleep, really.
Yes, me too. Friday, as far as I'm concerned, it starts soon, the weekend.
Such exciting people we are. We're talking about sleeping at 6 a.m. in the morning.
I know, no parties, no nothing. It's you shouldn't be having parties anyway during a COVID-19 era. But the thing I look forward to generally most weekends is sleep. And just, you know, the ability to do nothing in a day.
That's very exciting, Lynn. It's super exciting. But, I'm jealous of how much excitement you are facing this weekend. I will probably have chili pan meat. That's about it. That's the only plan I have this week because I'm going to just see where it goes, see where the weekend takes me. I will personally be paying attention to what's happening in the EPL. You know, it's Friday. Let's talk about a little bit about football before we get into the rest of the stuff.
Of course, we'll give you the airspace.
Right, he didn't manage to talk about football for the first half of this week, so yes. Like he's making up for it now.
Correct.
Okay.
United beat I've lost the scores here, but basically everyone's fighting for that third and fourth space because Liverpool and City have basically got first and second. Everyone's fighting for Europe, and United seem to have solidified their chances here, beating Crystal Palace 2-0 just a little while ago. That happened a few hours ago. Leicester beat Sheffield 2-0. Right now in third place is Chelsea. Leicester is in fourth and United's in fifth. All very close, 1 point apart. It's going to be very tight till the very end of the season, which is 2 games away.
All right. And now, Roshan, while you are on the subject, can you also tell us what's going to be happening later on after the 6:30 news?
Yes, because, you know, football is an international sport.
Absolutely.
Let's take a look at international news. Some news around Russian spies targeting COVID-19 research. So that's going to be interesting to pay attention to. Of course, we've got to talk about the U.S.-China Cold War. The U.S. is said to be weighing a travel ban on Chinese Communist Party members. And a top EU court ditches transatlantic data transfer deal. Interesting. I'm trying to use a bit of Noel's forward selling there, but I don't think I've lived up to that hype.
Well, I guess it's on me now. So Bill and Melinda Gates have some sharp words for US's lack of leadership in fighting the pandemic. As we know, they have now more than 3 million cases now, and the numbers are not coming down. So they have some sharp words. And the reason why I guess they are very interested in this area is simply because they have been investing money in vaccines, right? In, you know, finding cures for different diseases.
So if you want to weigh in on our conversations, WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we're talking about the favourite part of your quarantine wardrobe. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Staring at the Sun by U2, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. Now, the COVID-19 pandemic has changed everything in our lives, including the way we live, work, learn and socialise. It's more important than ever that we take good care of ourselves. So in the BFM Health Virtual Event Series, we're bringing the experts to your screen, so we'll help you learn how to manage your physical and mental health, as well as your relationships in this new normal. In our first webinar, find out how you can improve your eating habits and fitness regime during this COVID-19 pandemic. So join our conversation with experts on Facebook Live today from 12 to 12:30 p.m. But, you know, speaking of this COVID-19 quarantine period, quarantine fashion has started to take over, I think, most of our lives, especially for those of us who have been working from home. And, I have to say, it's very comfortable. I'm almost reluctant to go back to normal work clothes when I'm in the office, which is why I'm in extremely comfortable clothing today.
Fantastic. I didn't even know that quarantine wardrobe was a thing. I still try as much as possible to dress up because I want to feel like I'm working some semblance of normalcy in the day of basically staying at home or when this was happening for us, which will be next week. And I think the only thing I would change is instead of wearing like jeans or long pants, I would wear shorts. That's it. Otherwise, I'd still wear a polo. I'd still wear a t-shirt. We're hearing stories like this. This company we're looking at Slate, people were wearing swimsuits at home because there was only the need to wear that one layer. I mean, I'm slightly disappointed, but at the same time, I don't know. Is it disappointment or innovation? I don't know.
I think it's the summer, probably, and that's why they're in a swimsuit and it makes them feel better. For me, it doesn't work for me, and maybe it's the tropical country. And so what I find myself, if I'm not on Zoom, I'm like in a t-shirt and shorts. But when I'm on Zoom, I actually do make the effort, like as if I was going for a real meeting. And I also try not to wear shorts as well, because there may be that moment where you just stand up and then people see you in the shorts. It's a bit weird, right?
Yeah, I was going to ask whether, you know, when you prep for a Zoom meeting, whether you just prep the top half of you.
No, actually, it's the whole body.
Okay, that's good, you know, because I find myself when I'm working from home, I find myself very reluctant to actually dress in office clothes. Because, you know, initially when the MCO started and a lot of us were working from home, I had all the best intentions. Okay, I'm going to get up, I'm going to dress like I'm going to work. You know, it'll create that mental distinction between, you know, sleeping and actually working. That didn't happen. Because, you know, on the days where I roll out of bed, I was like, nobody's going to see me. You know, why not work in something that I am comfortable in? And I think that has come to translate a little bit into my the office attire that I wear now too, because you get used to that increased level of comfort during the 3 months that you're basically under house arrest, right?
Also, it occurs to me that generally here at BFM, we don't actually dress up like office wear, right? I'm not wearing a shirt and tie and slacks to work. So really, the difference between me dressing up for the office, our office, and me dressing up at home is really just whether I'm wearing long pants or shorts, because either way, I'm wearing a t-shirt or polo coming to work. It's more for the people who have those full-time office jobs, right? A lot of my friends wear shirts and ties on a daily basis, so I can see why that this would be a big difference for them. And you kind of get used to that the comfort that you have on a daily basis and the ability to really wear whatever you want or not wear whatever you want, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think, you know, when some of our colleagues, if they show up at work with a shirt and tie, some people will say getting married, going for a job interview.
And it turns out that's a big interview that day.
Yeah, and it turns out probably they're doing a big interview for that morning or so. So I think even for me, if I know that I'm not going to switch on the video camera on Zoom, I will still dress up. Just in case the host say, can everyone please switch on your video?
I mean, yeah, so I luckily don't have that excuse because the camera on my laptop doesn't work. So conveniently, I don't have to dress up for any kind of Zoom
event.
Thank
you for giving me an excuse.
There you go. Now you know, Noelle. But do let us know what do you think about this. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. What's your favorite part of your quarantine wardrobe? Has it made the transition into your office where you can let us know what you think? We have some messages for you right now. And then we're talking about leadership of in the face of this pandemic. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Kim Carnes with Betty Davis Eyes, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noelle. 6:17 a.m. Friday the 17th of July. And this morning I have an article from Forbes in front of me, and they're quoting something that Bill and Melinda Gates have said. So Bill and Melinda Gates were speaking at a Forbes 400 summit on philanthropy, and they've obviously been at the forefront of coordinating the search for an effective prevention and treatment of the COVID-19 disease. And they had some not very flattering things to say about the US's leadership in fighting this pandemic, because of course the US does have the highest number of cases in the world at this point, and it doesn't seem like there has been any kind of centralized figure leading the country when it comes to fighting this pandemic. A lot of the criticism that we've seen aimed at the US is that the leadership has really been left to individual states and governors to manage when it comes to actually getting people to comply with regulations. So this, for me, raised the question of what does it actually mean to lead a team, in an organization, a country, during a time of uncertainty like a global pandemic?
to put this into perspective, the US is in some sense quite decentralized. The states are quite empowered to make their own decisions. And so it seems like, you know, that so a lot of that decision is left to the state. So I guess that's not incorrect in some sense. But I think what people are expecting from President Donald Trump, right? I mean, you are the president of the United States. One would expect that you have some, you know, clear and very frequent communication, and one that, you know, that balances between the facts, what they know and what they don't know, right? And also presenting a coordinated front, because when you're in a crisis, people cannot afford to have too much information, because then it leaves too much room for speculation. And when you have different kind of messages, you know, Anthony Fauci was giving one set of messages, and Trump was saying this another set of messages, and it seems like Trump is not, you know, he's not having his sense of reality seems quite skewed. And so really, I think the conflicting messages just don't help at all. So, and his style of communicating, very knee-jerk reaction, definitely does not help in this situation.
Yeah, it's very reactive. It's also very, it seems very short-term, right? It's very focused on his, or seemingly very focused on his political base, on his re-election, and just catering to that echo chamber of okay, it's catering to the echo chamber. He doesn't want to fight with the governors too much, but you don't have cohesive messaging about how to respond to it. And I think that's very important. When you're facing a crisis, a leader needs to have cohesive messaging about the way forward. Now, you can have different divisions and a fragmented system under you, but you have to steer the leadership forward. Now, this is not unfamiliar, because under Pakatan Harapan, we seem to face a similar issue, right? Because we had a new government in place where a lot of the ministers seemed to have diverging opinions on different things. And sometimes it was playing out in the papers where they were essentially fighting with each other. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, to have the ministers kind of have their own opinions on things. It's up to the prime minister or the president to bring them together to the table. And you want to keep some things behind closed doors, but at the same time, you need the prime minister, who is supposed to be the first among equals, is supposed to bring them to the table and get a consensus, a working consensus on how to move forward. It's how you work with any, it's the same thing with parliament, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same when you have different political parties all vying for different goals, and that's humans, right? We all have different goals and different things that we want. You need a bridge to bring people together, and that's the role of a leader.
Yeah, I mean, and it doesn't have to, you know, when you're talking about a country level, it doesn't have to be the prime minister or the president himself that is the that unifying figure. I mean, I think here in Malaysia, we saw Dr. Noor Hisham come out as quite the hero of the COVID-19 pandemic, especially in the early days when we were also weathering a political transition. You know, nobody quite knew where to look to for leadership. So he came up as a kind of a steady hand at the wheel. And then after that, once the Perikatan National Government came in, they appointed Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri to conduct the press conferences. And he was also a consistent face at the helm of the COVID-19 fight. So that kind of consistent, coherent messaging is something that I think not a lot of countries have been able to manage. I mean, one leader who has been lauded for her consistent messaging is Jacinda Ardern, you know, of New Zealand. Because when this COVID-19 pandemic came out, she came out to say, okay, look, we're going to be prioritizing the people, we're going to be doing this, because at the end of the day, this is what's best for the public at large. And that messaging has been quite, has been the theme of her administration since she came in. You know, the kind of budget that that her government has put out, the kind of direction that they've taken has all been very human and people focused. So when she adopted that messaging for the COVID-19 pandemic, that was no surprise at all.
Yeah, because the key thing is when you're a leader, and not just a manager, when you're a leader,
you want to minimize uncertainty.
That is one thing, but people are looking to you. They're reading everything you say, paying attention to your body language. They're analyzing everything they can about anything you say. So really, when it comes to leading, messaging is the most important thing. And when you look back, I don't want to, this is the age-old comparison, but when you look at Barack Obama, he was very, very careful at the way he said anything, and was always very welcoming, as opposed to the sentiment that we're seeing now out of the White House.
Yeah, I think Obama has a way of, you know, bringing people together, right? His messages are always about, you know, closing the gap. One thing I also know about a good leader is a leader who knows when to shut up. You know, when you know you don't know your stuff, then what you do, you put it to the person who knows what's going on, knows what to say, and let that person take the lead. So I think in the case of Malaysia, Noor Hisham was put forward, and then Ismail Sabri. I mean, obviously, they needed the prime minister's go-ahead, right, to be the front people to, you know, make all the speeches, and Muhyiddin would just come in as and when, you know, they needed to make a, you know, a, quite a change in some policies.
And that says a lot about Tan Sri Muhyiddin, right? For his ability to let that attention go to someone else. Because unlike where you see in the US, Trump wants to do those daily press conferences, or was doing them, because it's about ratings to him. He's got an election to run. Whereas here, I do think that it was a big move for him to, for Tan Sri Muhyiddin to hand, let Ismail Sabri do the press conferences and Nur Hisham lead the fight on that front.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, shooting from the hip can probably get you far when it comes to, say, an election, when it comes to other issues that don't carry so much weight and uncertainty with them. So unfortunately, when it comes to leaders who do make very off-the-cuff statements, that kind of relatability doesn't necessarily translate into being some kind of a unifying guiding force in a time like the COVID-19 pandemic. So do let us know what you think. You know, what does it mean to lead in the face of a pandemic? Let us know. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We are heading into the 6:30 news bulletin, but first, So Lonely by The Police, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Pat Benatar with Hit Me With Your Best Shot. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. Now, we're looking at stories from around the world this morning, and over on the BBC, I see that how everyone is very excited and can't wait for some kind of a vaccine for COVID-19 to appear. Well, it appears that no one wants it more than Russian spies, who are targeting organizations trying to develop a COVID-19 vaccine in the UK, US and Canada. So this is apparently a warning out of the UK National Cybersecurity Centre.
Yeah, they're certainly trying to give it their best shot there to get that information. But, you know, what I'm reading this BBC article, and it's from their security correspondent, Gordon Carrera, I think. And what he points out that's different from previous times is the fact that they've singled out a particular nation instead of a particular organization, instead of saying state-backed organization. And then I think he's alluding to the fact that it's because it's due to COVID-19, the sensitivities around this. But it also, I guess, brings in this whole the boogeyman aspect of it all, right? Is like, why is Russia synonymous with hacking? This is, I think, the big thing came out of the democratic elections the democratic primaries in the US in 2018, the controversies that followed thereafter, the hacking of Hillary Clinton's emails and all of that. So the, and
I mean, the 2016.
Sorry, 2016. Sorry, I'm thinking about the House election. 2016 election.
Yes.
In the US at that point. So they became a bit more synonymous with that. And actually, it's very interesting because I'm not sure whether it's a boogeyman aspect or why does Russia seem to produce the best hackers in the world? I really want to know this answer.
So it's not just the UK that's sounding this warning. The Canadian Communications Security Establishment, CSE, has also likewise, sounded this. The US as well, US National Security Agency, NSA. And so they're saying, they're pointing to the Russian intelligence. The Russian government has denied this.
Of course
and
they have.
Yes, of course. Yeah. So here, you know, this cyber crime and cyber terrorism, cyber hacking, it's quite complicated, right? And if you're already so clever to do all this hacking, why would you want to leave a trail to suggest that this might be all linked to the Russian state?
Yeah, that was admittedly my question as well when I read this article, because if I was some kind of high level computer hacker, which I am obviously not, you know, it doesn't seem like it would be that difficult to perhaps plant a few red herrings here and there.
That's like saying, why do criminals leave clues behind? Yes, because they intentionally did it.
Sometimes they do. That's why red herrings are.
Sometimes maybe. It's an ego trip, mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a red herring, and sometimes just pure carelessness.
Yeah, so this is one of the things. I mean, it just goes to show that really everyone is on tenterhooks waiting for some kind of a vaccine.
Yeah, it's also MO, right? Sometimes it's the way it's done. Actually, because I was curious, so I pulled up some. I tried to figure out why that Russia is synonymous with this, and I've got a Vice article here. I'm not sure how accurate this is going to be, but they point. They interviewed a few people, including former NSA employees, and they say that it's rooted in decades of technical education under Stalin, who launched polytechnic schools to train engineers for his military industrial complex. And then once that fell apart, they all went in their own way. So it's rooted in TVET, vocational education, right there. Decades ago, someone saw the future and it was coding.
Yeah, and so they've linked all this thing to Cozy Bear. There's a, it's a group, and they have, I think they first surfaced in 2014, according to the American cybersecurity CrowdStrike, and they identified Cozy Bear as being a significant threat actor.
Yes, such a dangerous entity that Cozy Bear is out to get you and your data.
All right, so that's going to be something that's going to be very interesting to watch. I think it does essentially have roots in concerns over whether if a vaccine is developed in, say, the US or the UK, whether or not it actually is going to reach other countries around the world. Perhaps Russian state backers are looking to actually control a vaccine themselves.
Yeah, arguably that's probably the most valuable information on the planet right now. How the formulation, the research, anything that can lead to a vaccine is going to be the hottest commodity right now. And if you can't make it, maybe you want to copy it some way, somehow.
Or hack it.
Yeah, so this is one of the things that is probably going to be continue to be an issue as we head into the second half of the year, and as we are still waiting on some kind of a vaccine to clear clinical trials. But the other issue that has also been weighing on everyone is this tit-for-tat relationship between the US and China. It appears that now the US may also be weighing a travel ban on Chinese Communist Party members. So I've almost lost track of what round of tit-for-tat, you know,
round 74,
something like that. Yeah. But basically this is a source story, I think the New York Times is carrying this as well, that is basically likening this travel ban that is being talked about to the travel ban that was implemented against several Middle Eastern countries a year or so ago, when the tensions in the Middle East were kind of at their height. And it could be one of the biggest, most sweeping decisions against China that Trump has yet weighed. Because I mean, if you think about it, his rhetoric towards China since he came into power in 2016 has really varied very wildly. So now this could be the culmination of 3 years of on and off tension.
Yeah, so to be specific here, the Trump administration is considering a sweeping ban on travel to the US by members of the Chinese Communist Party and their families. So I think instead of targeted members, it's now a sweeping ban of the CCP and their family members. This is a source story.
Yeah, and the implication of this is even if you are not a Chinese Communist Party member, when you apply for a visa to go to the US, you can expect longer waits to get your visa, right? So that's one. And two, and many of these members send their children to the US to study. Thirdly, I'm also quite interested to know if whether Australia and UK would likewise follow suit and also impose some bans. But, you know, I can imagine the impact would be quite disastrous on their education sector and, you know, other business areas.
Yeah, I mean, the UK has just followed suit. It kind of seemingly aligned itself with the US in its actions against Huawei. So we'll just have to wait and see. But let us know what you think. Nevertheless, WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up for you, and then we're looking at the front pages of the newspapers. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. That was The Beatles with Can't Buy Me Love, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. 6:50 a.m. Friday the 17th of July, and we're taking a look this morning at the newspapers. So I have the Star paper in front of me, and their headline here is Too Soon for E-Voting. So this is commentary saying that, you know, GE15 may come too soon for the government's proposed plan to introduce some kind of electronic voting, and lawmakers on both sides of the divide have cautioned against rushing this implementation, you know, citing, of course, cybersecurity issues.
It's always about cybersecurity issues. And in fact, if you want to learn a few simple ways to help protect your identities online, I did a Ring and Sense yesterday with Dennis Martin of CTOS Holdings. You can find that on podcast on the BFM app or Spotify or basically wherever you get your podcasts. I've got the Malaysian Reserve in front of me, and the headline, all the attention is being placed on Top Glove as the shares were hit by a US detention order yesterday, or at least news that broke out of that. Glove maker has seen about 11.6 billion ringgit wiped off its market capitalization in the past three trading days. And this is based on the fact that US Customs is saying that there are some labor rights issues with regards to its practices when it comes to its workforce. We'll be covering doing more of this during the 9 o'clock hour. But right now, just in summary, if I take a look at yesterday's closing, and just take note that yesterday's trading day was interrupted for Top Glove. And then there were technical issues when it did resume. Top Glove was down 9.6% yesterday, trading at a last trade price was 19 ringgit 70 cent, 1.17 billion ringgit in shares traded.
Right. So looking at the newspapers that I have in front of me, Sina Harian. So the education minister, he's allocating 58 million ringgit for, you know, for schools to buy, you know, the necessary PPEs to make sure students have enough of that to, you know, to stay safe and come to school. And really, this is in response to QPEX's concerns that school teachers were forking out their own money to buy a mask and sanitizer. On the same note about education, so this is on page 2 of Sina Harian. So the education minister has announced that this math and science won't be taught in English. They were not going to reintroduce teaching math and science in English. So that is what he said. On the other hand, Jawi will be introduced in Scholar Journeys Kebangsaan and also the missionary schools that are assisted by governments if it's approved by the PIBG, the parent, Teacher Parents Association of each school.
And if I dive deeper into the Star paper and flip open to the second page, there's an interesting article here. Five ministers told to declare assets. So this was in response to a question by Teo Ni Ching, who's the Kulai Member of Parliament and former Deputy Education Minister. And this was a response by the Prime Minister. So apparently these five ministers, whom he did not name, haven't declared their assets despite being given the order to do so in March. And admittedly, you know, I wouldn't want to be one of these five at this point, because I would start sweating as soon as the Prime Minister came out to say in Parliament, yes, I would like you to do so now.
Yes, otherwise name and shame.
Absolutely. And of course, on page 3 as well, there's another article, Domestic Tourism on Promising Road to Recovery. So, but industry players are nevertheless still saying that there are going to be challenges ahead. So this is an interview with the Malaysian Association of Tour and Travel Agents. Their president, Datuk Tan Kok Liang, said that they are likely to see a rebound next year.
If I dive deeper into the reserve, I've got an interesting headline here, or story at least, on page 8, Selangor objects to reversal of ECRL alignment. Now, the Selangor government is opposing this based on the fact that the new alignment will pass through Gombak, Kuat, KL and Serinda, Selangor, and this will apparently interrupt some water catchment areas in the state. So this is going to be something that the Earth and Klang Valley in Selangor will want to pay attention to how these negotiations go around, because the government has been talking about reverting back to the original alignment, partly also, I guess, to look at projects at ways to boost the economy, right, which is the current priority as we go into the second half of the year and 2021.
And so NST has this on page 2. Cases will surge if people are careless. That's an obvious statement. But, you know, Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri, the senior minister, he's really wanting to, you know, to really remind Malaysians to just be cautious when you go out. So Malaysia faces a real risk of joining countries that have been forced to reinstate MCO procedures. So, you know, it really pays to just do our part.
So very quickly here, the Department of Statistics Malaysia has been releasing quite a bit of information this week. And yesterday, they gave out information for employed graduates. And they saw an increase of 6.9% to 4.25 million people here compared to... but this is in 2019. So I wonder how the data is going to look like next year, because this was all information for last year. The data for next year is probably not going to be as flattering unless we see some significant changes in the economy over the next few months.
And that is all of the news that we have for you from the papers this morning. But don't go away. We're bringing you lots more fascinating stories after the 7 o'clock news bulletin, along with the serious side of the morning run. So be sure to stay tuned. But first, we have a song for you and then some messages. New Light by John Mayer, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.